Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello there and welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host today because Scott isn't here, Ben Roy Turner, and I'm joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And Benjamin Richardson.
Hello.
So today we thought we would sort of dwell in sorrow and sadness and talk about cancelled video games that we never really got.
What else are we going to do on a Wednesday?
Like, it's hump day, yeah.
For it, yeah.
So I asked Josh and Benjamin to come up with two free games, or how many games you want that were cancelled and you never really got. So I'm going to start off by asking you, Josh, what game do you have cancelled that you really wish you had?
I wasn't expecting this. I didn't know you'd come to me first, Ben Roy.
I want you first.
Well, the first one I want to talk about is, it's the big obvious one, I think. It's the one everyone is still mourning over, and it's Silent Hills. Oh. It's the PT demo made by Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro, whose name I always mispronounce, despite my best efforts. This game, I feel like everyone was craving a new Silent Hill game for such a long time, and to have two, you know, distinct creators attached to it. The idea of them doing something together, the idea of it being attached to this playable teaser that was just dropped out the blue that no one knew anything about, was so tantalizing. And I think it helps that the game itself, we have no idea what it was going to be. We know that it was probably going to be completely different from the actual playable teaser that we got. But at the same time, the promise of what they could come up with and what was already in that, you know, demo itself was incredible. To this day, PT is still one of my favorite horror games of all time, which is probably more like a comment on how stagnant that genre has been over the past few years rather than its own quality. But honestly, that is something I will never get over. A lot of these games, I think, might not have turned out well. After all, there's a reason that they were cancelled, but PT is not one of them.
Isn't that the point with PT, though, that it needed someone from outside the industry to reinvigorate the genre, perhaps?
Yeah, I think you might be right there, because when it comes, the thing about horror games is that when it comes to, you know, making them, there are a set of conventions, yep, and that doesn't necessarily lend itself to surprise or scares, if that makes sense. Once as genre becomes popular and people start kind of copying it or riffing off it, there's an expectation there.
The original Silent Hill, even in itself, was something of a Resident Evil, not exactly a clone, but it was very much following the footsteps of
Konami
survival
saw that and was we'll have that. And then Capcom went, yeah, we'll have that for Resident Evil 7. So, but you need someone like a Kojima, I think, to just go, lol, conventions, give me this here and let me do what I want.
And I'm not going to lie, I would have worried about Kojima over-explaining the horror, because that's my least favorite part about any kind of horror story, is when the core of what's supposed to be scary is over-explained, because I don't like knowing what it is. I like the idea of the unknown more, and I would worry that Kojima would get a bit too indulgent with that stuff, but at the same time, we can never know, because cancelled games only exist in our heads.
Do you think Del Toro would have kept him in balance a little bit, though? Because his films are known for being a lot more suggestive and implied, yeah, rather than direct.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know what capacity he was on board with. I don't know whether he was there mostly for the designs or for the actual story itself. Like, I would have hoped he would rein him in a little bit. I feel like I'd have wanted it to be more collaborative.
I also think the prestige of him as a director, he probably wouldn't want his name or his reputation dragged through the muck by some of Kojima's usual nonsense.
Yes. Well, but then again, he likes a lot of nonsense as well.
He does, but his nonsense is usually logical in some regard.
PT for me was the scariest thing I think I've ever played to this day still, apart from, I can't remember the name of that game, but the game where you take pictures of ghosts.
Oh, Fatal Frame.
Yes.
Yes.
But PT for me really ruined me, and I had to actually look up a guide to finish it because like finding little tiny spots in that thing was almost impossible. But I just want to know, do you think that we've actually got that game? Because you think about it, PT had a baby in a little sink, you carry a baby on Norman Reedus, and also we had Del Toro back there like loving life. I think we actually got elements of this game within Silent Hill, and we even got, if you look at the beginning of Death Stranding, we got the sort of the area where Norman Reedus walks down at the very end, that sort of location almost building for building the exact same shot.
I think you're right. I do think elements no doubt turned up in Death Stranding. And I remember when Death Stranding was first announced with the launch trailer, and there was a part of me that clung onto the hope that it could have been Silent Hills, even though it was impossible with the licenses and stuff. What I want to ask you guys, though, is, to be honest, as much as I loved PT and I was looking forward to Silent Hills, there was a part of me, a little part of me, that was perhaps a touch disappointed that it was going to be based on the Silent Hill franchise. Like, when I saw how inventive that playable teaser was, there's a part of me that kind of wishes it could have been its own game. I worried whether it might be shackled by the history or the expectation of it being a Silent Hill game, and maybe it will succeed if Kojima can repurpose some of those ideas going forward and make an original title like that. It doesn't have that franchise baggage. I don't know.
I will say, after rewatching Silent Hill Revelations, the motion picture,
of course,
for the first time in, I think it's 10 years or something, I almost don't want anything Silent Hill ever again. But I think the thing is with Silent Hill is, like you say, it's locked to that franchise, but they can pretty much do what they want. As soon as you go into the other side, and as soon as like any character enters hell, it's all up for grabs. I mean, it can get as disgusting as it wants, and it can get as gory. I think that, sure, it's gonna always have roots locked down, but I think this would have been a nice way of Kojima sort of like hopping off and trying something different.
No, I agree. And I think in an ideal world, the scope of what Silent Hill is would have afforded them that freedom. But I wonder whether the realities of Konami wanting a Silent Hill game and the fans having, you know, including me, having an understanding of what a Silent Hill game even is might have, you know, implicitly added a few limitations on it.
We all know the reasons why Kojima ended up leaving Konami, and that's because he was being constantly restricted.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
So it seems almost certainly that he was going to be bound to some certain like preconceived expectations.
Yeah, and sometimes people just need creative freedom, like Benjamin. I gave you creative freedom to come up with a game. Nice little segue. What is your first game?
One that I can't even say on air, so that's a good start. I will use a Pratchettism to describe this game. It was an action-adventure called The Women of Negotiable Affection of the East.
I have no idea what this is about, so you're going to explain. Okay, story time.
The actual name of the game is, I don't want to use this word because it is a slur. It begins with a W, H, ends in an E, of the Orient, which is also a racial slur as well. So you can sort of see already why this game didn't make it out.
But what year was this going to be made?
This was scheduled tentatively for something about 2015, I think.
Yeah.
Or
2016. I was expecting the attitude or something like that.
This isn't a sequel to the adventure game Heart of China or anything like that.
Wow.
This was a follow-up to L.A. Noire, not a direct follow-up, but like it was the same team. It was a team that came out of Team Bondi, what was left of it. And they wanted to sort of reuse that engine and the concepts that they'd designed, the face scan technology that they'd come up with to make basically a new story and try and build upon that. I always thought L.A. Noire, well, it's actually interesting because this is a game that I didn't know I wanted until after I found out it'd been cancelled 4 years earlier. So I only actually got around to playing L.A. Noire last year. And I came away from that thinking, this game had so much potential that it couldn't live up to.
I wonder how L.A. Noire like would play now, because as it came out, so it was like groundbreaking for me.
Everybody knows, probably, who's played L.A. Noire, or even just vaguely is aware of it, will know what its biggest problems were, apart from its development. And that was that it had this big open world that was insisted on by the publishers, that didn't really serve any purpose. It had sort of very ambiguous interrogation sequences.
Where I doubt that, and then you just shout at someone and ruin their day. Exactly, like, what's going on?
Yeah, and it also had very wonky animation from the neck downwards. But you still come away, even though the overall experience is not necessarily a pleasant one, you come away feeling like, I got something out of this. There's a certain charm to it, and there's a certain honesty to this game. And you think, a sequel of this game could be fantastic. And this is basically what I won't repeat it again, but the Orient was going to be. only it was going to be set in a location that hasn't really been explored, a period of history that hasn't been explored much in game, and that was in the pre-war China and Shanghai. So this was a time during the Chinese Civil War between the Kuomintang and the Communists, and it was also during the time of Japanese occupation. It was just before they made a coalition as well. So it's that would make a really, really interesting setting for some very, very interesting stories and a lot of different allegiances and like a lot of moral ambiguity, and it would have been fantastic to see how that played out. Now, unfortunately, as anyone who's read about LON will also know, had a very difficult production. There was a lot of development malpractice from the studio, people forced to work ridiculous hours, not properly compensated for it. Brendan McNamara was dragged through the coals after the fact by a lot of his employees, and basically Bondi couldn't secure any further funding after that because no one wanted to work them. So what happened is a team of their developers left, and they formed a coalition with a company, I think it was called Kennedy Mitchell Miller. But even though I think they got $200,000 bursary from the Australian government to produce it, but ultimately they didn't have the funding for it. Like, there was still that stain.
It was very that hangover. Very sort of like a big sort of scope for their first game, I think. Yeah, especially the facial technology.
They were taking the technology over. They still had the tools. They still had obviously the personnel and the knowledge base. But you look how long it took it for L.A. Noire to be developed, and that was with the help of Rockstar.
Yeah,
I think this game had no chance at all, and It's a great shame it was cancelled because it would have been something very unique. It would have been totally different. But given the hell went through developing the first game, it maybe was for the best.
Yeah.
I'm always conflicted on this because when it was announced at the time, I was really looking forward to it, not having really known all of the internal mess that was going on at Bondi and Rockstar. But even then, knowing about how long the first game was in development and how much Rockstar helped, I was never confident that it was actually going to come out.
You see, with L.A. Noire, as much as I sort of enjoyed it, when I came away from it, I read about the turmoil that plagued its development. I thought, was any of this worth it? Ultimately, no. These people went through hell and to develop this sort of patchy game. It probably would have been best had they not done so.
What I will ask, Benji, because Rockstar still owned the L.A. Noire license, would you be at all interested in a straight follow-up made only by Rockstar?
No, because I don't personally, and if this is not necessarily a nice thing to say, I don't want Brendan McNamara to make any more money in royalties off this game that he tortured people for. In terms of the game itself, I would like to say it, but ethically, no.
Yeah.
Well, going from a very unique game to one that wouldn't be unique at all, Star Wars Jedi Knight 3, Brink of Darkness. Yes, another Star Wars game. I'm a Star Wars fan. I need this Star Wars title.
Please tell me more about this, right? Because I didn't even know this was a thing until you mentioned it before we started recording.
Sorry, before you get into this, I just want to interrupt and put my way I feel on this subject.
Do it.
One of the cancelled games I was looking forward to was a Sam & Max sequel back in about 97, which was cancelled because LucasArts wanted to just make Star Wars games. I heavily resent Star Wars games as a consequence of that.
Look.
And I'm glad to see one of them cancelled. pure spite.
You can leave Carl Katarn out of your war crimes there. But yes, so Star Wars The Jedi Knight series had gone for ages, but I'm just going to skip all that and go to the recent two, which was Outcast and Academy. They were following on from Carl Katarn, who was a former Jedi, a former Imperial stormtrooper. He was now I hate to use the Han Solo type, but he was a gun for hire for the Rebellion. And we got a nice little story in Outcast, probably the better of the two, when we go to Outcast and Academy, of Carl Katarn coming to face with becoming a Jedi again and first getting these powers out of anger and hate. He thinks his spouse, his partner has been murdered by Dasan. No, not Mrs. Katarn at all, actually.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And he goes to get the power of the Jedi back. And then, cool, we go through that. And by the end, it turns from a first-person shooter into like a pretty decent third-person platformer action-adventure sort of game in the Star Wars universe. And then we get to Academy, which is basically the refinement of that formula and taking powers that you were sort of restricted in the Outcast. You had to wait and you had no choice. But in Academy, you were a Katarn's Padawan. So you could be any sort of form of an alien. You could look like Plo Koon if you wanted. You could be a male. You could be a female. And you could choose the path you went down. So you could choose, like, do I want to focus my force points into force choke so I can throw people off the edge? Do I just want to heal myself? Or do I want to, you know, lightning, unlimited broadband sort of thing? But then that game gets left on a cliffhanger. And that has two endings. You can either... As Jaden, Kyle Katarn's Padawan, you can either go to the dark side of the Force or you can be a good guy. And it ends pretty much there. And so if you're a dark Jedi, you fight Katarn, you beat him, but you don't actually kill him. And if you're a good guy, you help Katarn out. And then you're sort of at the end and you're just left on a cliffhanger. We don't know what's going to happen next. And reading about this game... It was going to finally end the Kyle Katarn sort of arc, something that it's just so annoying that we got so far, so many games, and we never got to the end.
So why didn't they make this third and final game?
They just decided not to.
Oh,
from what I can find out, LucasArts just moved away from the Jedi Knight series in like
was this,
totally.
Was this part of Disney's drive to place a lot of Star Wars content as like in the legacy category and start fresh?
Well, Disney weren't really involved at the time. It was like the early 2000s. They just started, they went from making sort of like the Jedi Knight games to cranking out, which I think is probably the issue here, prequel games.
So we got this wave
of prequel stuff after
that. Question, and does the Disney factor mean that there's virtually no chance of ever being any resolution on the Kyle Katarn arc?
We don't get non-canon games anymore. Yeah. And the problem is, if they bring Kyle Katarn to canon, where do they bring him in? And he wouldn't... I don't think he suits in.
The new Knights of the Old Republic is surely based on the canon of Old Republic 1 and 2.
So they're taking the groundwork from that. But the thing is, that was never explored by the films or anything. With this era, it is now being sort of replaced with the Aftermath novels, and that period between the Death Star 2 and Starkiller Base is kind of already been like paved over, and Fallen Order. Fallen Order, Carl Kestis is kind of replacing those sort of like
oh, well, there was only one Jedi, but then there's more sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's actually the wrong period of time.
So just speaking hypothetically, if it was another Jedi Knight game,
yes,
would you like it to be in the sort of third person sort of pseudo RPG form of Jedi Academy, or would you prefer it to go back to the roots as a first person shooter in Dark Forces 2?
I'm greedy. I want both.
Because I think I thought Dark Forces 2 in particular was great, and that's not something that we really see out of Star Wars games now.
Yeah.
I want to be able to get my E11 out and try and shoot someone with it, but then switch to a lightsaber and throw it at someone's face and cut their arms off.
I'm not gonna, I used to love those games, right? But I'm not going to lie. I was never a fan of Kyle Katarn. I know that's
he's the best.
Travesty to say, because so many Star Wars fans love him. But I preferred to play as my strange little own character in Jedi Academy and have the strange double lightsabers of weird colors rather than be Kyle. Well, I had a friend called Kyle, and I used to resent the fact that he was in a game and I wasn't. He wasn't the same person.
Well, because you're a friend of me and I'm hosting the pod, I'm going to go next with Glover 2, because not many people talk about Glover. And Glover was a great game where you played as a glove. And
what is Glover?
You had to get a magical crystal from one part of the level to the other, Josh Brown. But the Brilliant. Thing is, you could transform this crystal into a bouncy ball, a bowling ball, other balls that I can't really remember right now. Basically, just different balls of different sort of like...
It's the texture and balls,
yeah,
game.
Brilliant. Okay,
so I was saying to Ben right before we came on the pod, Josh, Glover, you played as the right hand,
yeah,
and Glover 2, you played as the left hand.
But
in Glover 3, the potential Glover 3, would you have brought both hands together? You know,
I think
Glover,
so.
Glover came out in a really inventive time when you had such good talent work on things like Buck Bumble and all that sort of things.
Inventive is so generous.
I mean,
particularly on the N64, there was a lot of inventive platforms. Glover, obviously, in Buck Bumble, you just mentioned, there was also the Sucker Punch game, Rocket Robot on Wheels, which is very much overlooked. Chameleon Twist, which is a good game where you lick the environment. There's Iggy's Wrecking Balls, and I think Glover was one of the best of all of us.
Do you want to know why Glover 2 didn't happen, though?
Yeah,
I desperately do. The Glover series died at Glover 1.
I don't know anything about Glover, right? I'm going to put that out there.
You're
but I was promised before starting this that it had an amazing story that made you chuckle while reading it. So,
yes,
come on.
It did, but I don't care about that right now. I'm going to tell you why Glover 2 died. It's because good old Nintendo, good old, I'm going to say blame Reggie even though he wasn't there. Back in the day of the N64, Nintendo had sort of the monopoly on the cartridges, right? That's why they're in the business. They were, we're only going to sell you this many cartridges and we're going to restrict strengths. And I think the only 5 games a year thing was gone by then, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a hangover from the Famicom era when the controlled production, but still very strict.
So when Hasbro was making Glover, they were, oh, we only want to make 150,000 units. But in N64, Nintendo were like, oh, mate, how do you feel about having double that, 300,000? 300,000, come on, half price. Some sort of deal. We never see the figures. But good old Nintendo, all right, mate, you want a couple of these? Did that. And guess what? They took it, but then they didn't sell 300,000 copies. And then they were left with almost 100,000 copies of Glover just sitting about that I'm going to buy one off eBay after this.
I was going to say, have you not ordered them all?
I'm going to buy one. I don't know if it ended up happening like E.T. where it gets put in the ditch. But Nintendo killed Glover by trying to get more Glover made.
When was this? When did this happen?
It was the Attitude Era. It was the 90s.
98, I think. 98.
Yeah.
90, that's much later than I expected something like this to happen.
So Nintendo killed Glover by going, do you want to make more? And then they bought them all and then they killed the game. Poor Glover, man.
Is there any chance for a Glover 3 revival?
We haven't had a Glover 2,
the Glover Cinematic Universe.
Glover 2, he plays left hand. Glover 3, both hands. Glover 4, get some boots in there.
The only chance of it happening is if Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, is a huge fan of platform games.
Could you imagine that smirky face as he's playing Landau Cruising? That's just my... Do you love my glove?
I can as it happens.
Losing my actual
mind. I'm just thinking about the weird swing in confidence between we don't want to make 300,000 because we don't think the game's good enough. However, we do want to make a sequel.
Yeah, however, here's a deal from Nintendo. Oh, we're dead. So do either of you want to go on the final game?
I don't think I can follow that, Ben. Who have you got?
Well, I've got a game that isn't really technically a game, so that's a good one, but it's...
Well, let's be quick.
I'll be very, very brief. This had a very brief cycle. It was a fan-developed remake of Chrono Trigger, the SNES time-traveling classic RPG. They originally wanted to make it with the N64, not with a glove. Huh. But eventually the project evolved to the point where we're making it, I think, in a very early form of the Unreal Engine, and like with very good quality graphics and some professional people. I think they had an animator who had worked on The Matrix, on The Matrix Revolutions. They wanted to do like 10 remakes, like 10 scenarios from the game, like super high quality. This is in 2004 as well, back when fan games like this weren't very common. And Square Enix, as you can imagine, got the hump. They got sent the lawyers down and said, nah, stop this right this instant. Because obviously one day they might have wanted to make a Chrono Trigger remake of their own.
Yeah.
We probably will after,
well, the tragedy of this is that it's 16 years on and they've done absolutely nothing with the franchise since. You can't even play Chrono Cross, its sequel, unless you've got a US copy on the PS1.
It's frustrating that, because obviously they're entirely in their right to do that because they own the IP or whatever. But at the same time, it's annoying when they're bringing the hammer down and then refusing to just do anything other than sit on this license that people clearly want to see more of or remastered or whatever.
I'm just thinking of Glover and how Nintendo could have done the Power Glove, like they could have done a crossover and we would have had that. But I'm really sad, I never played Chrono Trigger, sadly. I've just watched it all. Anyway, we're going to go on to questions now, Benjamin, because I'm just so upset about Glover.
Do we not care about my final game, Benroy?
The gloves are off.
It was Alan Wake 2, if anyone wants to know. But
I care about Alan Wake 2 as well, but the problem is we've got some big dads coming in soon and I don't want to get beaten for it.
The Dadly Boys are on the way.
So if you want to send a question to us, we would like you to do that with the hashtag WCGP. And our first one comes from Dr. Coctopus, and it brilliant. Is. We're going to be lightning round here, and I'm going to read the first part of it because I want to. What is your favorite PS1 game?
It was. I don't have any idea. Metal Gear Solid Apocalypse with Bruce Willis in it, maybe. That was always really good. So Bugs and Taz, what was it? Adventures in Time or something?
Yeah.
Time Twisters?
That's pretty good.
That was really nice.
Sounds legit. Benjamin?
Very safe choice. Final Fantasy IX.
Ah, see. Mine would probably be Glover or maybe one of the Rugrats games because they were bad.
The Rugrats, they were really good. I talked about that in the chatty faces this week.
What was that, South Park game where it was the first person shooter with turkeys that came out of the mist?
That was one of the first games I ever played and I hated it.
It was terrifying. It was a horror game.
Is that one called South Park? That's where I'm from. South Park Hailed for Chief or something like that.
Maybe.
That was a different
Chef,
one, I think.
Chef's
Love Shack was amazing, but that was not the game. It was
South Park 64 was a first-person shooter, but obviously that wasn't on the PS1.
No, I'm pretty sure it came PS1.
I think it did. Well, yeah. Same one.
Yeah, well, okay, they must have.
Like, people didn't think the legendary Glover came to PS1.
No, I was surprised to learn that, quite honestly.
But, come on, it's Resident Evil 2. Anyway, one from Nicholas Cobbs, and it is going to be... The question is, you're illegally allowed to carry around one video game weapon. What would it be? And yes, this is in public. So quick fire, Josh. What weapon do you want to carry around?
I can't answer this because I'm questioning the motives of the question. Yeah, I don't know why I'd want to carry around a video game weapon. Like, as a prop, like an actual weapon to scare people with.
Well, you can do whatever you want. If you choose to kill people with this weapon, then we will find out what type of person you are.
Well, it's not... It's kind of counts, I think. But you know when you get inflatable versions of yourself in Metal Gear Solid 5 to distract people? I'd like one of those to throw around the street and then nip away. Like, I could do it when I'm walking with my mum and dad or something down the street, throw out an inflatable version of me, and then I could nip off to McDonald's or something.
Or keep Slack
online.
That's
already legal.
That's a good point, yeah.
It shouldn't be, but it is.
Decoys.
That's amazing. Benjamin?
Oh, I don't know. A big knife.
Not even the biggest knife. That big Final Fantasy.
That big cloud knife. That big cloud knife.
If I was going to pick a Final Fantasy weapon, it'd be the megaphones.
Okay.
Well, also, it's ridiculous carrying around a megaphone shouting at his opponents to death.
It's true.
And get out of the way and bugger off and things like that.
Get away, go on.
I'm going to cheat and be simple here. I'm going to use the glove from Glover and I'm going to hold a lightsaber with it and kill everyone.
I resent you.
So, yes, that was the What Culture Gaming podcast. Don't forget, if you want to write into us, use the hashtag WCGP to have your questions read on the air. I've been Benroy Turner. I've been hosting instead of Scott Telford. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this and then give me a smack afterwards. you've been listening to Benjamin. Where can they follow you?
They can follow me on Twitter at BARFreepod.
And they can follow you in the street.
If they're fast enough.
Josh Brown, where can they follow you?
Well, I'm normally just walking around Newcastle, so like, you might
unless
stumble.
Unless it's one of your decoys.
Unless it's one of my decoys, keep an eye out for that. But also at Josh Brown with two O's on Twitter.
You can find me around the Newcastle area, normally coming out of a KFC, and I'm at Ben Roy Turner. Please also follow us at
What Culture WC Gaming. That's an annoying Twitter
what
account.
What Culture Gaming. If you type What Culture Gaming,
What Culture Gaming,
it.
Type that into the internet. Use any search engine. Ask Jeeves if it's still around. And again, I've been Ben Returner. This has been Benjamin Richardson and Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
See ya.
Layers.
I'm never talking about Glover again.
No, I'm going to play it the second you get home.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.